Come on, Trouble Lord. Hey, this is FieldPod.com. The Week in Georgia and English coming to you from sunny San Francisco. Today is Thursday, the 18th of December. On this date in 1620, the Mayflower docks at Plymouth Harbor. 1777, the U.S. celebrates its first Thanksgiving, marking the recent victory in the Battle of Saratoga. 1865, the House passes the 13th Amendment, abolishing slavery. 1878, John Keogh, the last of the Molly Maguires, is executed in Pennsylvania. 1892, the first performance of the Nutcracker in St. Petersburg. 1916, the longest battle of the First World War, the Battle of Verdun, ends with almost a million casualties of mainly French and German soldiers. 1941, Japan invades Hong Kong, taking no prisoners. 1956, Japan joins the United Nations. 1958, Project SCORE, the world's first communications satellite, is launched. 1961, the Tokens earn a number one hit with The Lion Sleeps Tonight. 2010, anti-government protests begin in Tunisia. Birthdays are Ty Cobb, Joseph Stalin, Robert Moses, Willie Brandt, Edith Piaf, Steven Spielberg, and Brad Pitt. Today is International Migrants Day and Sabaoba. Today it's just me, Mark Mullen. My Georgian Journal and Comedy Spotlight for column this week is about the Russian economy, the price of oil, the importance of predictability for economies, and how that relates to Georgia. For comments or to ask a question, go to tpeelpod.com or send us an email at tpeelpod@gmail.com. On the 12th of December, the Interior Ministry detained the director of the Institute for Development of Freedom of Information, Georgi Kuldiashvili, on charges of illicitly carrying firearms. Kuldiashvili was carrying home a registered firearm after it had been repaired at a shop. The firearm was dismantled in the trunk of the car, but without the necessary permit for transporting it. The crime is punishable by a fine or imprisonment ranging from 3 to 5 years. After 3 hours of examination, Kuldiashvili was detained and taken to the detention center, the Moduli building. According to the statement by IDFI, Kuldiashvili was detained even after he voluntarily participated in the investigation process. During the court hearing, the prosecutor failed to present any arguments that Kuldiashvili would evade prosecution. The court concluded that the process of detaining Kuldiashvili was conducted in violation of the criminal procedures code, and he was released. An investigation on the case is underway. The next hearing is scheduled for the 17th of January. Kuldiashvili has suspended his functions as director of IDFI until the investigation and court decision is finalized. IDFI claims that the Interior Ministry and Prosecutor's Office want to influence and intimidate Kuldiashvili. They are, of course, right, for anyone who knows him. And he is an active member of This Affects You campaign. It might be the reason for the investigation. Recently, IDFI published a number of articles critical of law enforcement authorities. Mining work resumed at the controversial Sakdrisi gold mine near Bolnisi on the 13th of December. Scientists and environmental groups say that the 5,400-year-old gold mine contains invaluable artifacts. For those who don't know, it is the oldest gold mine in the world. The mine has the status of a protected heritage site, but the status was unexpectedly lifted by the Ministry of Culture in 2013, leading to the resignation of a deputy minister. The company RMG Gold was then given permission to mine there. Earlier this year, the court blocked further work in Sakdrisi following protests of NGOs, activists, and preservationists. Regardless, RMG Gold resumed work this past weekend, saying that they once again got permission from the culture ministry. In a statement, they explained that they resumed work because part of the site has already been fully researched by archaeologists and the rest of the area can't be researched because of bad conditions. The statement also reads that international experts allegedly concluded that they don't expect to discover any new artifacts at the site. The company also refers to a 2006 decision that banning mining work at Sakdrisi, arguing that the work ban caused the local municipality a loss of tens of millions of lari. RMG Gold also claims it plans to finance a new archaeological museum in Bolnisi to continue research and protect the artifacts that there aren't any of, according to the same RMG. In reaction, activists protested near the Sakdrisi mine. Police prevented them from directly approaching the area. To cut to the chase, everybody is very ticked off, but for some reason the government is siding with this Russian company, which is drowning in its own BS. Ilya II joined the condemnation of the work in his Sunday sermon the next day, as did the Georgian Orthodox Church in general. The Georgia National Museum said that they were extremely concerned over the destruction of the archaeological site. Misha wrote on his Facebook page that it was a heavy blow for Georgian culture. Free Democrats called the launch of mining operations a barbaric act. The government has been backing RMG Gold in the debate throughout the year. Prime Minister Irakli Kharibashvili said in March that it was not possible to prove that Saktrisi represented the represented the world's oldest gold mine. He also noted that RMG, saying that it wasn't actually the world's oldest gold mine, which it is, he also noted that RMG had invested $300 million in Georgia and that halting the company's operations would leave 3,000 people without jobs. Yeah, I don't know about that $300 million number. There's money coming in. The U.S. is offering Georgia $30 million in financial aid and a further $57 million to Moldova, Georgia and Ukraine collectively in a bid to increase U.S. military deployment in Eastern Europe. U.S. Senate and House of Representatives reach agreement on the 10th of December regarding the prosaically named Consolidated and Further Continuing Appropriations Act 2015 bill that funds the government through the 30th of September 2015. You may know it as the one that has the text written by Citibank that will allow them to have taxpayers insure derivative bets by giant American banks, because that's such a great idea. Anyway, the $30 million will come from the U.S. Foreign Military Financing Program, and the $57 million will come from the European Reassurance Initiative Program. The EU announced last week that it would allocate €46 million to Georgia as micro-financial assistance in 2015. A memorandum of understanding for the program was signed by the European Commission for Economic and Financial Affairs. The assistance will be distributed evenly between grants and loans and will be distributed in two equal tranches in 2015. Also last week, the Asian Development Bank approved a $108 million loan to Georgia. It will finance major improvements in the water supply and sewage system in towns in western Georgia and will benefit around 350,000 people, allegedly. The loan is the fourth tranche in a $500 million funding pool designated to upgrade the water supply system in Zudidi, where 84% of the population have no access to piped water. And the Japanese government will grant 1.5 million lari to Georgia to buy equipment for determining, to buy equipment for determining the risk of natural disasters, according to an agreement signed on the 15th of December. Call me crazy, I'm guessing this will be Japanese-manufactured equipment. The grant is an addition to the Japanese earlier $2 million grant for completing environmental projects in Georgia. On the 13th of December, the U.S. Congress unanimously approved fresh economic sanctions against Russia. It requires Obama to impose conditional sanctions on the defense sector should Russia state-controlled firms sell or transfer military equipment to Syria or to entities in Ukraine, Georgia, or Moldova without the consent of their governments. And we're talking about Abkhazia and South Ossetia here. The rule is aimed at helping stem the flow of weapons from Russia across the border into eastern Ukraine. It also gives Obama authority to penalize Russian gas giant Gazprom if it's found to be withholding natural gas supplies from NATO states or Ukraine, Georgia, or Moldova. Contrarily, in a revised version of the Ukraine Freedom Support Act of 2014, U.S. lawmakers dropped a key provision that would have given major non-NATO ally status to Georgia, Moldova, and Ukraine. Following up on last week's stories, the Georgians and Ukraine's new government on the 13th of December, Ukraine's President Petro Poroshenko granted Ekaterina Khuladze Ukrainian citizenship. She is a candidate for the post first deputy interior minister. Khuladze served as Georgia's deputy interior minister under Vano and Misha from 2006 to 2012. Poroshenko expressed hope that she will help eradicate corruption in Ukraine's traffic police. Ukraine's interior minister, Arsen Avakov, wrote on Facebook on the 12th of December that after the citizenship procedures are finalized, he will ask the cabinet to appoint Khuladze next week. There was speculation on Zguladze's possible appointment for weeks. Commenting on it last week, Member of Parliament Dato Saganalidze, leader of the Georgian Dream majority group in Parliament, said, quote, "Ukraine, which I love so much, really deserves better ministers. No matter how much we try not to notice it, it will strain our relations to some extent," end quote. Just an FYI. There's also an unconfirmed rumor that Zuda Adeshvili, former justice minister, will be appointed in Ukraine as the anti-corruption committee chief. I've heard he is in Budapest. No idea if he's part of the sizable collection of former Georgian officials working with the Ukrainian government, but I don't think so. For newcomers, Adeshvili was very much inner circle with Misha. It was the one who set up and ran the criminal justice and prison system, which was based not on actual trials, but on what was called plea bargaining, and was really the worst part of the UNM system and the one they remain in denial about to this day. Last week, Prime Minister Khadabashvili talked about reforming the Interior Ministry. This week, on the 18th of December, Khadabashvili said that the government should consider institutional reform of the prosecutor's office in order to increase its independence and accountability. He asked for Justice Minister Ted Tsiloukiani to create a working group to determine how to do it and what models to follow. He told her to cooperate with former Chief Prosecutor Archil Kvilashvili, whom Khadabashvili said has an NGO that is working very actively on the issue already. As a reminder, while the prosecutor's office is part of the Justice Ministry, according to legislative amendments made last year after Tsiloukiani had been appointed, the Justice Minister is completely sidelined from overseeing the prosecutor's office, which was an unfortunate move. And I'm not really sure why they did it, other than the fact that Tsiloukiani sort of came from the outside, had originally been allied with Alassani, although not so much by that point, and had moved during the campaign closer to Ivanishvili, but they didn't want her to oversee the prosecutor's office, unfortunately. As a note, the draft resolution on Georgia, which the European Parliament plans to pass on the 18th of December, expressed concerns over the lack of accountability of the prosecutor's office. On that note, on the 18th of December, the European Parliament ratified the EU Association Agreement with Georgia with 490 votes for, 76 against, and 57 abstentions. President Margvelashvili was there, as was Misha. It was a big to-do in Georgia. The session was broadcast live in the Kutaisi Parliament. Khadabashvili wrote a letter on behalf of the Georgian people. They are a big, famous European entity, but in fact, the European Parliament didn't need to ratify it for it to take force. They just wanted to because they felt they ought to. According to a statement by the Russian Foreign Ministry on the 11th of December, the treaty signed with Abkhazia was in response to Georgia's unrestrained NATO aspirations. The statement can unrestrained. So they should be restrained in their NATO aspirations. Who's going to be doing the straining? The statement came a day after the 30th round of the Geneva talks. Official Moscow emphasized the treaty was not annexation, really, but was just because they needed to pay closer attention to security issues in the South Caucasus because of all of this lack of restraint going on. European Council extended the mandate of the EU monitoring mission in Georgia by 2 years until the 14th of December 2016. EUMM contributes to reducing tensions between Georgia, Abkhazia, South Ossetia, Russia through facilitating contact between parties. Outgoing EUMM Georgia head Toivo Klar said that the two-year mandate is unprecedented since EU missions are usually only granted one-year mandates at a time. On the 13th of December, the Finance Ministry's investigative service detained a Defense Ministry official for allegedly accepting a 400 lari bribe. Bahva Surmanidze is the head of the purchasing department at the Georgi Abramashvili Military Hospital. He's charged with rigging a tender process. Investigators did not specify what company was the winner of the tender or when it took place. The investigation is conducted on the basis of suspicion of bribery, a criminal offense which is punishable with 6 to 11 years in jail. As a reminder, in late October, 5 defense ministry officials were detained and charged with embezzling more than 4 million lari in connection with a allegedly sham tender, which was not a sham tender. It sparked a political crisis in the ruling Georgian Dream coalition, which is now largely blown over. On the 16th of December, Latvian Foreign Minister Edgars Rinkevich said that the EU might grant both Georgians and Ukrainians visa-free access to EU Schengen zone next year. Latvia takes over the EU's rotating presidency in January 2015 and is hosting the Eastern Partnership Summit in Riga in May 2015. The countries would have to undertake several reforms first, such as increased judicial cooperation with the EU. Value of the lari against the dollar dropped again by 6 points, according to the new exchange rate from the 18th of December. $1 is 1.91 lari. The day before, it was 1.85. Former guard of late Prime Minister Zura Jvani was released from preliminary detention on the 14th of December on 2,000 lari bail. Mikhail Zadzamia was detained on the 21st of March 2014 and charged with negligence, causing death, as head of shifts for the Prime Minister's security guards, Tanzania should have been with Shivanya on the day he died, violating Section 342, Part 2 of the Criminal Code. Negligence while on duty leading to death can be punished with up to 4 years in jail. The prosecutor's office gave Tanzania bail because he's already been in pretrial detention for nearly the maximum duration of 9 months. Tanzania has asked for a jury trial, but it's taking a long time to put together a jury. As a reminder, the pathologist who did the autopsy on Shivanya, Levon Chachua, also detained for negligence, was also released in November on 10,000 lari bail. Georgian Dream Coalition in Parliament is discussing whether to dismiss the head of Parliament's Finance and Budget Committee, and by the way, professor at Vanderbilt, Dato Onoprashvili, because he is a member of the Free Democrats. Majority Leader Gheorghe Volski argues that the head of the Finance and Budget Committee is responsible for controlling implementation of the budget. This can be difficult for someone from an opposition party. The discussion about possibly dismissing Onoprashvili began after he said that the Ministry of Refugees is unable to spend its allotted money and that the government should revise its expenditures to other bodies. The statement prompted Refugees Minister Sosar Subadi to accuse him of promoting lies. Parliament's regulations stipulate that 76 votes can dismiss a head of a committee. A new head must be selected within 14 days. Following up on previous week's stories about the Mohe Mosque dispute, public defender Uche Nanoashvili is considering checking on the progress of a new commission tasked with studying the conflict. He argued that people would trust the commission more if he gets involved as an observer. Following up on last week's story, Georgian Airways is continuing to protest the recent Russia-Georgia contract resuming direct flights between the two countries, but are not suspending flights to other destinations. To recap, Georgian Airways complained that the agreement gave an unfair advantage to Russian companies. They said giving 13 Russian companies permission to enter the country and each being allowed 14 flights a week meant that the government is, in effect, handing over the whole Georgian aviation market to Russia. The economy minister responded that Georgian Airways is trying to reduce flight frequency in order to maintain inappropriately high prices on tickets. Certainly, there are very high prices on plane tickets in and out of Tbilisi. President Mark Velashvili visited Ashgabat, Turkmenistan, from the 14th to the 15th of December. The delegation included the economy minister, deputy foreign minister, secretary of the National Security Council, and the head of the Georgian Chamber of Commerce. Georgia and Turkmenistan signed 3 documents on transport, tourism, and trade relations. Tbilisi City Hall has teamed up with partners from Dublin, Ireland, to fix Tbilisi's traffic problem. The two cities signed a memorandum of cooperation last week for Tbilisi to learn from Dublin's experience in environmental and traffic jam management. Apparently, Dublin is the 10th most congested city in the world. On the 16th of December, the 4th Mechanized Brigade of the Georgian Army left for Afghanistan. They'll serve in the city of Mazar-e-Sharif under German command as part of the NATO-led new mission Resolute Support. The troops underwent a 5-month training program in Germany, which ended in November. The Estonian-Georgian film Tangerines, or Mandarinebi, was nominated as a finalist in the Golden Globe's Best Foreign Language Film category. The award ceremony will be held on the 11th of January, 2015. Satellite images have allowed Georgian archaeologists to discover an ancient settlement in Shiraki in Kakheti region. Only preliminary excavations have been done so far, but archaeologists believe the settlement dates back to the 10th to 12th centuries BC. Harvard University is negotiating with the Ministry of Finance about the possibility of opening a Georgian Studies Center at the university. On the 17th of December, American vocal band New York Voices teamed up with the Tbilisi Symphony Orchestra for a charity concert at Tbilisi Concert Hall. The money raised, around 68,000 lari, will be given to the Solidarity Fund and will cover medical treatment for children with cancer. Georgia had its first successful live donor liver transplant. The surgical team of Georgian and Japanese specialists spent 12 hours removing a diseased liver from a patient, replacing it with a portion of a healthy liver from the patient's brother. It was performed at the Gocha Ingorokva Neurosurgery Center in Tbilisi. In parliamentary news, on the 11th of December, Parliament did not uphold President Mark Velashvili's candidates for the open position on the Central Elections Commission. Mark Velashvili proposed Levon Turashvili and Zurab Kirkadze. The chairman of the Law Committee, Vahtang Khmaladze, explained that Turashvili only got 3 votes out of 6 committee members and that Hirakaze got only 2 votes. At least 5 votes are needed to accept a new CEC member. The president's office declared a new contest for the position. On the 12th of December, MPs confirmed the final version of the 2015 state budget. The health ministry received an additional 127 million lari in 2015 as compared to 2014. The Ministry of Regional Development got an additional 125 million lari, more than last year, and the Education Ministry an additional 100 million lari. The budget for pensions increased by 64 million lari. For 2015, tax revenues are expected to increase 771 million lari. That's quite an increase. And also, on the 12th of December, Parliament approved, with its third and final reading, an amendment to the tax code. It increases excise tax on tobacco and alcohol starting from 2015 and introduces a retail sales tax on cigarettes from mid-2015. Concerning tobacco, excise tax on a pack of filtered cigarettes will increase by 15 tetri, bringing it to 90 tetri starting on the 1st of January 2015, and on unfiltered cigarettes by 5 tetri, bringing it to 25 tetri. Starting from the 1st of July, a retail sales tax rate of 5% will be introduced on tobacco. For alcohol, excise tax rate on 1 liter of beer will increase by 20 tetri, bringing it to 60 tetri total. Excise tax on other alcoholic beverages and ethyl alcohol will be doubled. Government expects roughly 100 to 110 million lari in additional tax revenues as a result of these changes. In Kviti Zazrebi this week, poet Gheorghe Lobzhanidze talks about how society treats boys and girls differently. He recounts his shock when he recently learned that many people in Georgia choose to abort their pregnancies if they're having a girl, simply because they want boys. He says that in general he is not against abortion, but that he strongly condemns selective abortion. He compares these parents who kill their daughters without justification as no different from an old custom in the Arab world where families buried their newborn daughters alive if they were born out of adultery. The tradition was banned by the Quran and is not in practice, though this attitude of shame of having a daughter stays in the society, according to Lobzhanidze. For instance, to gain others' respect, Arabs call themselves Abu Luka, as in, I am the father of Luka, or whatever is the name of their eldest son. In this attitude of belittling females and this attitude of belittling females exists in Georgia as well. Lobzhanidze recalls his Iraqi friend who only cares to ask, how is your son, when he knows that he has a daughter as well. By contrast, Lobzhanidze says he feels absolutely blessed to be Abu Lili. The meme this week is some photos posted by the Dutch embassy in Georgia on their Facebook page. It shows some projects they're working on at Tbilisi Street with a bike lane. People on Facebook were pretty excited about it. Not sure if it'll happen. Gheorghe Lobzhanidze reports for Eurasianet on BI's alleged shady personal past, worth taking a look at. Photos of Tbilisi and Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty on their site. Interesting article on documenting the geography of academic plagiarism, Georgia's red flagged. On analysis of the Russia-Abkhazia Treaty and what the EU has to do with this, from Carnegie Europe, national interest on how Iran tries to skirt Western sanctions via Georgia. Georgian athletes did well at various sporting competitions. Agenda.ge sums up their achievements. Another installment in Georgian journal series on the Ndivani family, this one with a focus on the eldest child, Nino, and everyone's multiple marriages. Fascinating family, by the way. Be sure to check that out. All these things to read are posted on our forum. The geo capital number is 203 million. That is the amount in export in dollars for November 2014, according to the National Statistics Department. By contrast, in November 2013, Georgia had $312 million of exports. So compared to November, it is a 35% drop in exports month on month. Amidani Cinema is playing Hobbit Hobbit, The Battle of the Five Armies in 3D every night until the 24th of December, 7:30 and 10:30 p.m. For those in London, there will be a free lunchtime concert with Eliso Bolkvadze on the 23rd of December at 1 p.m. The venue is St. Martin in the Fields. That's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. Our email is tpeelpod@gmail.com or post to the forum on our website, www.tpeelpod.com. Everybody have a great Christmas and build up to Christmas. So, Solomon Linda worked packing records in Johannesburg in the only recording studio in sub-Saharan Africa at the time. In 1939, his band, The Evening Birds, recorded a song that sold over 100,000 by the time it made it into a box of South African records that was sent to Alan Lomax, the American famous folklorist who passed it on to Pete Seeger in 1951. Seeger's band, The Weavers, recorded it in 1952, shortly before Seeger was blacklisted as a communist by Joe McCarthy. Gradually, it was rewritten as The Lion Sleeps Tonight before The Tokens, a white doo-wop band from Brooklyn, hit number one with it on the Billboard charts, making it history's best-known African song outside of Africa. The South African writer Rian Malan, which, by the way, read his fabulous book, My Trader's Heart, best book ever written about apartheid. Malan followed the money and wrote a great article about it in Rolling Stone in 2000. So, we will finish with, from 1939, the original, The Evening Birds and Mbube.
Mbube, we move them, 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 we move them.
We move that.